Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello, I'm paying Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hollis, Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 175. NASDAQ Futures down 675. Dow Futures are actually up 20. So we had just Twitter's earnings just came out. They beat, they're up 222. So 37 cents versus 15. I don't know, these guys even gap, Brendan? I don't know. A lot of these companies that just came out, they're 37 adjusted, whatever that means. So,
what does it mean when they adjust them like that?
Why
do they have to adjust?
I have no idea. Why do we have so many stocks even on New York Stock Exchange? There aren't even companies where you can't vote. And why are all these new rages if it's your company, like the, I think Amazon's like that, and Facebook, Amazon definitely is, right? Where they're always A and B stock when nobody ever gets to vote the schmuck out?
Right, because either one of them is heavily weighted towards the original ownership.
Well, but the dude who runs the place gets to pick the board.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to be to the point where he gets voted out, he probably deserves it. I mean, by the time those guys vote you out, I mean, for God's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was doing a big rant yesterday about people in office, or that we essentially pay their salaries. Last night or yesterday, I'm listening to Mike Pompeo. Was that his name, Pompeo?
Yes, Mike Pompeo.
On TV,
Iran.
He was talking about Iran, and they asked him about the gas prices.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, consummate liar, like everybody seems to be in this administration. He said it has nothing to do with that. It's all summer blend. So let me get this straight.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Well, it goes from like $48 a barrel to $66, and it's all summer blend. I mean, why? How does somebody?
That's not true. I mean, that can't be true.
No, it's not true. I mean, there's no way it's true. But I'm saying, what do these guys do
mm-hmm.
When they just? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
I'm reading here on the interesting thing this morning that I kept in a catch when I go through this. States where you're liable to get caught for speeding. What is the most dangerous state in the country for being caught by speeders?
I don't know.
Wyoming.
Wyoming, really?
I would never have guessed that.
That would have been very low down on my list. I would have thought
Me too.
That's wide open.
They tried to get speeding ticket data from each state, 2011 to 17. This is Yonkers Honda, of all places, did this study. Where the hell is Yonkers?
Hmm. Yonkers is in New York.
All right.
I think it might be a little bit outside of New York City.
It's the second. It shows the number of speeding tickets issued per 10,000 citizens. States like North Dakota can be compared fairly with California. Amazing.
See, to me that makes perfect sense because in states where there's no crime and they have nothing to do, what else are they going to do? they're sitting around all day not doing anything, so they're going to set up speed traps and they're going to pull people over.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas cities that actually have, you know, people in them and there's crime and there's, you know, different things that keeps the police busy,
yep.
They're not going to pull as many people over. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
But
still, I would not have guessed that states like Montana and Wyoming were high up on the list to catch speeders. I mean, I think of that as the...
Well, this guy's got to do something all day.
Well, why?
Okay, now
they should be, like, sweeping the streets.
No, I'm not going to quiz Brennan because he's an attorney and doesn't have the skill set. But, now, what's wrong with this picture? Just read this. I'm going to read this, these two paragraphs, and Mattie Weber, who's now becoming very mature, whenever I say that, he's very all upset because he doesn't think, like, young girls like him anymore. Well, police, I did have, what's her name, Emma, Jay-Z's friend, did say that at 35 he can no longer be the political voice of young people.
Whoa.
How's that for a shot?
Man.
The, I'll wait till he gets back to his spot. But, yeah, that's a shot. When the first time that happened to you at age 35, Brendan, when you're not young anymore and the young girls go, you're too old.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very bad thing. Anyway, get a load of this.
I stepped away for a second, but I think I heard what you said, and that was the 20-year-old girl said 35 is old.
Is way too old to be the voice of
you
young people.
You can no longer be the voice of the youth.
I think that's probably fair. I mean, I think when I was 20 and in school, I probably thought 35 was old as hell.
Oh, yeah.
See, it used to be 30. Never trust anybody over 30.
Yeah.
That was our generation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God, yeah. All right.
Isn't that funny?
Police in Wyoming issued just 42,000 tickets. It translates to a jaw-dropping 903 tickets per 10,000 people. That means that Wyoming drivers have nearly a 1 in 10 chance of getting a speeding ticket. West Virginia, on the other hand, issued the fewest tickets of any state, which is 64 written per 10,000. Michigan and North Dakota weren't far behind. Be sure to read this study yourself, see where your state stacks up. Okay, now immediately, which should pop either one of your minds, What should pop in?
Well, in mine, it's where's Illinois.
Okay,
that's what pops into my mind.
I got to dig into the full thing here, but no. Take a listen. Look at the two different states. Wyoming has I-80 going all the way across it. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
How many people on I-80 are Wyoming citizens?
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
So just because they're
you're trying to get the heck out of there.
Yeah, they're drawing the conclusion that the people getting tickets are the Wyoming citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that's probably totally false.
Yeah, that'd be a good piece of information to see how many of those are locals.
Name me anybody who's ever driven anywhere that had to drive through West Virginia to get there. You don't have to go to New York, you don't. You go to Washington, you don't.
I drove through it once going to North Carolina.
Okay, but I'm saying not Washington, not...
No, but typically, yeah.
Not the major cities.
That would be considered... It's not a flyover state, per se, but it's a state that, unless you have a reason to go there, you're probably not going to go there.
Right, I mean, you're going to go through Tennessee if you're going to Florida.
Correct. And you can't get through there quickly. You know, a state like Wyoming, it's a straight shot, like you said, wide open roads and just go straight through, unlike going through a state like West Virginia, which has more twists and turns.
So as we talk about with the stuff from the government, always be careful what the statistics are telling you. I will bet more than half of those tickets are on I-80. And are people from out of state.
And to people from out of state.
Yes.
Because you can, just like when you cross the border into Wisconsin, they know the Illinois license plates.
Or you're on I-90 and you're going to Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So they have two major east-west... We call it, interstates across there.
So when you're driving on 80 through Wyoming, are you heading to like San Francisco?
Yeah.
Like where the hell are you going?
Yeah. Well, if you're going west, that's where you're going. San Francisco.
Okay.
Sacramento. Anywhere.
Colorado.
Well, Colorado. It goes above Colorado, I believe. Right.
Right. But if you're going to steamboat, you
go through Nebraska and then you get to like the border and then it goes up to Wyoming. It actually barely touches Colorado, if I recall.
If you're going to steamboat, you get off at Laramie and turn south.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm saying if you're going west,
I've made that drive a couple of times going skiing. I know you have many times, yeah. Chief. And you get off right at the border, basically.
Right. Well, if you go through Denver, you don't even make it to the border. Well, maybe you do.
Maybe you do. Or it's close.
Yeah. It's close. And then, what I'm saying is you've got that.
I'm trying to think if you continued on through Wyoming, I guess if you're going all the way to California, it would make sense. Otherwise, you're going to get off in Utah?
Well, let me ask you this, since you're Mr. Computer. How many people per year visit Yellowstone and Grand Teton Parks?
That's true. Probably a ton. I'll bet
it's 5 million. Now, those people don't live in Wyoming. You think none of them get a ticket? So there. I'm going to say with the amount of people that are in the state, the 49,000 tickets is actually probably very low. And they probably belong in the middle of this pack.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, you know. Anywho, Brendan, how are you? What are we doing on Stanley's is closing?
I know. Isn't that amazing? That's a shock. Well, we knew it was closing because they put the property up for sale, but the abrupt closing of that. Where are you going to go for vegetables nowadays?
I don't think I've bought a vegetable in the 25 years I've lived on the north side any place but there.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
They always had a really good selection and good prices.
The other place by me, which I might have gone, would be Treasure Island, and they closed.
Mm-hmm.
So now what?
Well, you know, I think it has something to do with you.
Well, I think what's going to happen is I'm going to have to shift my shopping to the south side.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they've got Pete's Produce.
Where's that?
They've got a couple of different, I think there are now six or seven Pete's Produce markets, but the first one that I recall seeing was around 49th and Pulaski.
Well, there's two on 95th Street.
Okay. I don't know where they are all now, but that was
one's
the first one.
One's kind of in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd go in there.
By the way, I pulled up the most visited national parks list in 2018. Would you like to venture a guess on the top five?
I'm going to say the one in California is probably way up there, Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
Yosemite comes in at number six.
Okay.
4 million visitors.
Grand Canyon?
Grand Canyon comes in at number two with
really?
6.3 million.
Wow.
And they're close to Phoenix. You got to be close to a city or else Yellowstone's probably in the top five.
Yellowstone is number five, 4.1 million, just ahead of Yosemite.
Number one's probably some natural beach somewhere.
Could be something like even in the middle of a state like New York or Massachusetts.
It's the Great Smoky Mountains National Park,
Tennessee.
11.4 million.
Wow.
But it doubles second place, which is Grand Canyon.
My goodness.
Well, it's by far the most visited national park in the U.S.
That's in
Rocky Mountain National Park's number three, Zion National Park's number four.
Hmm.
Well, we're right, but it's real easy when you say visit. It's real easy to just drive through Rocky Mountain National Park and not get out.
They call it recreation visits, so there's probably a definition for that. I don't think it counts if you... maybe it does.
I drove through. I went down. There's a road you can drive through on, like, a two-lane road, or there's this one-lane road that takes you up over the top. It's pretty neat. And we did that, but I'm sure that counts as a visit. You had to sign in.
Well, yeah, and I think the Great Smoky Mountains, their location alone, it's more east, obviously, and there's a lot more people east.
Aren't they on the Appalachian Trail, too?
Yeah, so it's a lot easier, and it's not that far from, like, Nashville and cool cities that you're going to visit.
Did you ever know anybody to do that?
And there are an awful lot of people around there.
Right, whereas to go out west to those parks, I mean, that's a big trip for people. Yeah.
That's usually your destination.
Yeah, and those, I mean, I've been to, I've been to Smoky Mountains, I've been to Grand Canyon, I've been to Rocky Mountain, I've been to Yellowstone, and it's already said Grand Canyon. I was bored at all of them.
Why?
Because it's boring.
Well, I'll tell you what, go to Yellowstone in the wintertime.
I've been there in the wintertime. I've been there in the summertime.
You thought it was boring in the wintertime?
Yes, it's boring as hell.
God bless.
Skiing is fun, but you don't ski at Yellowstone.
No, but I mean, it's a little different than most places. You don't necessarily...
No, it's cool to look at, and then after about an hour, I'm like, all right,
an hour. It takes you like 8 hours, 5 hours just to get there from where you get the snowmobile.
I know. It's awful.
But where else do you see a river racing by and 2 feet away of the mud's boiling?
No, I know. It was cool. Like I said, I looked at it for an hour. I saw the geysers. I saw I went up in the mountains, and I was like, all right, I'm good. I saw like a moose or something.
You remind me a little bit of Dr. J. We were out in Vegas. They had the Barbary Coast where the two ships fight.
The what?
The Barbary Coast, right next to the Mirage. The two ships come around in the big pan and they have like the little pirate shooting.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking
about. Well, speaking of stupid.
Well, but what do you mean? Dr. J thought that was spectacular. I took him out to Hoover Dam. He's the most bored man on earth. I could spend a month out there watching it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a ton of appreciation. I mean, I would absolutely appreciate Hoover Dam, and then after an hour, I'd be like, all right.
Oh, I can't wait to get inside and see the...
That is an amazing thing, and when you hear the story about how it was built, and you just look up from the bottom and you see the dam, that is truly remarkable.
But he was bored in a minute.
So that was the national park list. What is the most visited park in the United States? Not a national park, but the most visited
state park.
Park?
Oh, it's got to be something.
Central Park?
No, Central Park's not on here, surprisingly. It's the Golden Gate National Recreation Area.
Okay.
15.2 million visits in 2018, recreational visits. Far and away, the most visited
park. Well, what if Lincoln Park was a national park and it had 15 million?
I guess it's not, not designated as a national park.
No, it's not. Well, Golden Gate was because they were building the... It used to be part of the Army complex, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lincoln Memorial is considered a national park, and it came in at number 5, 7.8 million visits.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned earlier, that it might be a small park. Even with the national parks, it might be something like the Lincoln Memorial in a town like New York or someplace in Massachusetts or Washington, D.C., because there are quite a few of the national parks that are small but within cities.
Central Park must not be considered a national park.
No, it's just otherwise, it's a city park.
Yeah, otherwise it would probably be far
away. It's like Lincoln Park, only a lot bigger.
Right, exactly. And what? Central Park, by the way, also boring. I love New York, though. God, now I'd much rather go to New York than the Grand Canyon.
How could it be? I mean, you know, sometimes I wonder about him. A few times when I was younger and I'm ready to go to New York, I jog in Central Park. God, the scenery was unbelievable.
New York is the best. I love it.
There's a million girls jogging right next to you. How could you be bored?
Because you can go sit at a cafe or a, you know, not that I would do this, but a bar, and see the same amount of people and not be in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, but you're letting everybody know how athletic you are. Blah 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 blah. You talk to people when they're jogging; it's just different.
I just like you know in the movie Vacation when they get to the Grand Canyon and he's like kind of like puts his arm around the kids and he's like, all right, let's go. Like they look at it. When I saw the Grand Canyon, I was probably only like 12 years old. So you don't appreciate anything when you're 12 years old. But I looked at it and I was like, wow, this is spectacular. And then after about a half an hour, it's like, all right.
Like, well, I'm definitely on my bucket list. I want to walk down and stay a night down there and then walk back out.
I mean, I know.
I've done that. It's about in Phantom Ranch.
So I remember where we went. There was no walking down. That was steep as hell, and there was no way you're walking down. But I know there are trails in certain areas you can enter.
And you go up and down.
There's like donkey rides and stuff. I'm not doing that either.
I'm not getting on the donkey. He'd look around and say, "Who's this?"
I'm not trusting the donkey.
No, and you know these guys walk right on the edge too. That's their shtick. You're like, hey, buddy, move over.
And really, the donkeys don't move on the edge. What happens is when you're on top of the burrow, it looks like they're hanging over the edge because their legs are in the middle. They've got a really wide paunch in the middle of their body, but their feet are quite a bit in from the edge. It's not as bad as it looks.
It's not a hand on the wall like Maddie would be.
No.
Anywho, all right. All right, Brennan, we've got a bizarre weekend. We've had the from a legal perspective, we got this Mueller report out. I really hope we don't spend the next year fighting about it, but I have a feeling we're going to.
We are.
I know I don't know when in my lifetime, except maybe at the end of the Vietnam War, do I deduce that there's more governmental work to do? And yet I don't see people doing it. Although, I will say this in deference to, people like Kevin and so forth who do keep track of these things, and that's why we have the man around. Evidently, the Tribune was regaling last week some conservation bill that somehow got passed under Trump and his other buddies' noses because they must have been worried about the report. That evidently puts massive amounts of land back into primitive wilderness and whole areas of whole stretches of rivers and stuff. And people are thinking this is one of the best bills we've ever come out with in the last 20 years.
Really? I missed that.
And evidently it was very bipartisan and blah, blah, blah. So it was in Thursday's Tribune. It was Thursday or Friday's Trib.
Okay. That might have been when I went over to Michigan because I don't get...
I got it on my e-thing here if I can run it to you. Problem is whenever I send somebody a Tribune article, if they don't happen to have the Trib where they paid for it on their computer, they can never open it.
Mm-hmm. Well, my problem over there is that we don't have internet service where we live, so it's hard. I can sometimes get the Tribune on my phone, but it's hard to read. So
you can't read it on the phone. Yeah. But what I'm saying, they're saying big stretches of river have been the number one thing is what primitive area or something where you can't do anything there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't drill. You can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they had some rivers that they did, and they put some stuff back into. Yeah, a couple of the places that Trump grabbed, you know, a couple of those places in Utah, I think those might have stayed off, but by and large, it's a massive gift back to primitive. And what's the one after that? Protected? I think it's primitive and then protected.
I don't know the class.
Yeah, they were given a. Let me see if you can find it. I think it's primitive. Is it's got to stay pristine. I don't even know if people can go in there. And protected means, you know, you obviously can go in. Anyway, but so I mean, I'm hoping that there is stuff being done. I mean, I don't know if you listened to the show yesterday, Brent. But my feeling on this really is that Comey did the right thing by not prosecuting Hillary, even though there was all kinds of stuff there to make people's life entertaining for 6 months. You were not guaranteed a conviction. Mm-hmm. And the last thing you needed to do was that is during a presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly think Trump landed in the same place.
I do, too.
So why don't we just forget about it and go on?
Mm-hmm.
Not forget about it in the sense that we never want two people like that running again. But, I mean, what's the point here? I mean,
well, I think that it would have been a different situation had Hillary won the election and some of these things came out, just like it's a different thing with Trump. But I think that they're, because I think both of them would be in the same situation.
Probably.
And then the question comes in is, are they good for democracy? Are they good for the country? And are they, by their actions, pushing the boundaries of executive power?
Without question, they both are.
Mm-hmm.
Both were.
And therefore, the restraints should be by Congress,
right,
to take back some of their power if they can get away from the fact that they want to get reelected.
Well, and both sides, if you know, if I'm this raving Democrat, which I'm not, or this raving Republican, which I'm not, one thing you ought to be able to agree on is the limits of presidential power.
Yes.
Not just that your guy's in office, and we'll let him do whatever he wants, and then we'll try and change it when the next guy gets in.
Well, that's right. Whether it's your guy or our guy, and the difference is that at some point you're pandering to your base for your reelection, rather than making a hard decision that you know means that you've got to work harder and explain yourself to your electorate. Whether it's in the state of West Virginia or the state of Wyoming or the state of Massachusetts or wherever it is, instead of looking out and allowing the extension of executive power, you're not willing to take a stand because it's your guy or their guy who's in the office.
Well, when we come back, just you and me at 7, let's talk. Betty, write this down about the let's talk about how these elections, I think, really have changed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, S&P Futures now down 2. Dow Futures up 23. Come back, let's have Mr. Joel Alkanen.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow with Mr. Brendan Cornett, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I'm just sitting here kind of seething a little bit about Mike Pompeo's. After my rant yesterday, he didn't listen. So let me get this straight. The places that don't have city blends are people in, like, the country, like West Virginia and places like that. Those are Trump people. Those are people that are supposed to believe the crap these people say, that his, that their prices went up, say, in northern Wisconsin because of a city blend when they're not within 80 miles or 100 miles from a city. Do we really believe this crap? Anyway, I don't think we do. S&P futures down 150. NASDAQ futures down 675, but somebody is believing it. That's the weird part. Dow futures up 22. Again, we got the story today is oil, but we'll get to that in a second. DAX down 29.2%. FTSE up 33.4. CAC around down 10.2. So a mixed bag in Europe. Asian Nikkei up 41.2%. Shanghai down 16 for the second day in a row. Down 0.5, and it's got the Hang Seng unchanged. Which would be interesting because it's a $29,000. We'll check that. Oil up 35 cents, 65.90. Brent up 17, 74.21. RBOB gas, 2.13. And you're hard pressed anywhere in Chicago area to find gas under $3. Matter of fact, there's probably a few stations left. So if you see one, pull in, as they say. Silver down 6 cents, 14.91. Gold down 2.90, 12.74. We're not sure why exactly gold is going down because of Iran sanctions, but nobody likes gold. Manny, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, although there is rain in the area, so that's causing a little bit of a slowdown throughout the area, but no accidents to report. Looking good on the Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford. Traffic building on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for Edens and Kennedy. Off the expressways on the south side, we have a crash at King Drive and 57th Street. That's causing some delays. And then on the north side,
at Addison and Halstead, not too far from Wrigley. There is a crash this morning on that intersection. One other area of note, northwest side Ainslie at Pulaski, there is a structure fire. The main fire is out. Happened overnight, but crews are still on the scene, and that's affecting Pulaski and Lawrence. They're a relatively busy intersection on the northwest side. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds. We cool off significantly. We'll reach a high of just 55 in the city. Could touch the low 60s inland. Right now, it is drizzling and 47 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 88 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 64. In sports, White Sox went to Baltimore and took it to the Orioles, winning 12-2 last night. Diamondbacks blew out the Pirates 12-4. Cubs were off. They host the first place, best record in the National League Dodgers tonight at Wrigley.
Chief. They just come off a big series up in Milwaukee.
That's right.
When they went 3-4 or something?
I think so. Dodgers are looking good, as they have for the last several years.
Yeah. And they've got Kershaw back.
That's right.
And they got rid of, who did they get rid of? They got rid of Puig. I think he was a...
That was over the winter.
Yeah, I think he might have been more of a distraction than... Well, he sure helped him out in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing fine. So are you believing that gasoline prices are only city blend, like your Secretary of State told you yesterday?
Chief, I believe what you believe.
That these guys are pathological liars?
Okay, well... You know how I like to stay non-political on your show, but you make it hard that way. But, I mean, gas is going to go up, right? Crude hit $66 today. That's a component making gasoline. It's going higher. And whatever it is now, $283, $310, it's going to be higher in two, three months from now.
I would agree. And since my Suburban has a 42-gallon tank, I can't say as I'm overjoyed by this.
But can you help me with politics? Because you're so good at politics.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you have... Well, didn't we have a tweet a couple months ago about oil's too high?
Yep.
Right? And boom, you take it down. I can't remember what the price action was. Maybe from 63 to 61, whatever the price action was now. And now, the sanctions? I mean, it makes no sense to me. I don't see any political coherency in these policies. A little scary to me, but boom, you have the moving crude here, so who knows what the next action out of the White House is going to be, but certainly if he tweets it down again, boy oh boy, what a buying opportunity that could be.
If you would have faded every tweet for the last 3 years, you'd be a very wealthy man. I mean,
what about cancel the Air Force One?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the last time Boeing traded under 200.
Yeah.
And then GM said a negative tweet about that. But have you noticed that they, he's still been making some tweets, and they've been more personal attacks on people than anything else, but he's really stayed away from the stock specific.
Well, and, yeah, once everybody...
Maybe he got a little call from the SEC or FINRA on that, but he's really stayed away from being stock specific and now more general.
Well, the style was, and probably still is you beat up on a company, and then they come to Washington, and they basically, I don't know, who knows what goes on behind closed doors, some deal happens, or something happens, and then all of a sudden the stock runs right up again. I mean, it happened to Boeing, it happened to GM, it happened in... clearly Boeing was, they were, we're going to get rid of the F-35, we're going to cancel this, they just got, this thing they just got the other day, over the weekend, which is pretty quiet, this $14 billion contract to rehab 133 planes that are as old as me. I mean, what do you think a B-52 cost to build originally? $2 million? And now it's $100-some million a plane to rehab? I mean, what are we even talking about? God bless. I mean, we gave them $14 billion to tie them over on the 737 thing, or what did we just do?
Planned obsolescence? I don't know, Chief. I mean, very difficult. Boeing is your story stock, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, 360 to 400 is your trading range in that, and until the until everything gets sorted out with, the 737 MAX, that's just a trading range stock. It's amazing that they haven't taken it through the bottom of the trading range, and there's certainly a cap on it at 400.
Well, what I did some sour math, and the number I came up with, I don't know if I can even do the math by my head again, but as a guy who worked at Pullman when we had a delay and disruption situation on a contract where we continued to manufacture while you weren't delivering, okay, because the first car had not been approved yet. Now, it's a very small problem compared to Boeing, but it's the same problem. I mean, you've got people working, you've got parts going on, you're paying for parts, you're paying for people, and you're not getting any money from the end user because you can't deliver a car, just like now these guys can't deliver a plane. Well, they've cut from 57 to 42 per month by last estimate. So I'm going to say those planes list at 128. I figured the real price is more like 110. I'm going to guess their margin is 15 to 20, which is real high for something that complicated. But it basically came down to cost them like $80 or $85 million a plane. Now, what I could be off by some. But if you multiply 80 to 85 times 42 per month, now, it's not necessarily a drain rate because, you know, as soon as this is over, I'm assuming it will be over someday, people are going to show up and start giving you $110 million a plane. But right now, it looks to me like you're $3.5 billion a month in the hole on this contract, cash-wise. Now, it's not profit because theoretically these things are, they're articles of sale ready to be sold. But in terms of cash, as long as you keep that line going for 42 planes a month, not to mention you're probably flying in places to park them. God knows how much it's costing you to do that. And what's the maintenance on these things, especially come summertime when it gets hot? If 2-3 months, $7 billion is a pimple on the ass of an elephant to Boeing. But if we're talking, Christmas time and it's Merry Christmas, Joel, by the way, Boeing planes aren't flying yet, I don't know if these guys can handle a $30 billion deal with now, how many planes is that? Another 300 of them parked somewhere. I mean, it's tough even for Boeing. I don't know where the crunch line is there where you've overloaded the camel, but I'm going to say come September, October, those guys got a real problem if we're still in this mess. Maybe before then.
Chief, are you trying to make sense of this whole situation? Are you trying to apply logic and numbers to this? Because that's not going to work in this market.
Well, at some point you're not going to want to pay $377 for the stock. I guess what I'm saying. When you're draining $3 billion a month. So that's essentially 1% of the stock price. When I say drain, it's not drain, because when you start to sell them again, it just comes flying back. But your cash flow, and I know these guys can borrow at a rate none of us can come close to. Thank you very much, Fed. But even if you start doing, 3%, 4%, the banks are going to say, how much more do we want to give Boeing? I'm saying every month this, it's not just one more month. It starts to be,
So what you want to look for on this is if you want to, and I haven't done all my homework on this, but, if you see a ratings change, from Moody's or S&P or something, then that will be something to hit the stock. But right now it's fixed, it's not fixed, test flights, no test flights, is not affecting the stock. But, once you get a downgrade, once that debt becomes more expensive to carry, then you got problems in the stock. If you just look at the stock from a chart, it moved up from the last earnings beat from 360 to 440. And no matter what happens, no matter what news comes out, they have not been able to take that stock to 360.
That's right.
So you're a long-term Boeing bull. Hang on to that level. It's paid to buy it there 3, 4, 5 times if you had to what to do it. And then 400. But until you see a major ratings change from, one of the big boys that are worried about the debt, I just see this thing in the middle of a trading range.
Well, right now, the most dangerous thing, and I don't see it happen yet, but you might would know, you're more in tune with the news than I am, would be for somebody who's got deliveries, let's say late this year, to say, screw you, I don't want any deliveries. And then you call the next guy in line and say, it's good news week for you, you're going to get yours sooner, and the guy says, I don't want them sooner. That would be a big problem, but I don't think I've seen that yet, and I don't know if they would tell us if it happened.
No, and you, I mean, you've seen some delays, I think, from American, a few of these other companies, yeah. But no, that hasn't happened yet.
So, Joel, take care of yourself, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Yep, not much going on in the sports world. Go Blue.
Yep, SP Futures up a whole 50 cents. Can't seem to stay down. NASDAQ Futures down 50 cents. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
9, 2, 2.
Want some whiskey in your water, sugar in your tea? What's all this crazy question you're asking me? This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, because I don't want to see.
A little Three Dog Night. I saw those guys twice in concert when they were Three Dog Night. Mm-hmm. And I saw them when they were my age, and they didn't sound the same. But
and you know, you know where Three Dog Night comes from?
Yeah.
How cold it is.
Yeah, Maddie, do you know where that comes from?
I have heard the term, yes.
Or what does it mean?
It's based on, like Brendan just said, how cold it is.
Okay.
I don't know who invented it, but if that's what you're asking.
What is an Australian term, isn't it?
Is it Australian or is it Scandinavian? I thought it might have been Scandinavian.
Well, if you're somewhere where there's a lot of snow, I mean, there's a place, cold place in Australia, right?
According to Google, it is said to be a phrase used by Australian Aborigines.
Okay, you're right.
Okay.
Meaning a night so cold, you will need to take three dogs to bed with you to stay warm.
Yes.
It is also the name of a famous band of the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. Now, my question to you is, would your dog like it if two other dogs were invited into bed with him and you and Joe?
I think threesome.
That's a hard no.
Hard no? It's his spot now and he's...
Oh, yeah. We're lucky that we get a space, let alone other dogs.
Yeah, it's Billy over the series, he watches... If people have gone on vacation or whatever... it's all the same breed, but he's tied in with these golden retriever people, right? So once they don't have a dog of their own because they like to travel, but they watch. All of a sudden, he shows me this picture. They bring in three dogs. They're all these big old goldens. And him and his wife go to bed. All three goldens are on the bed, and they're like, "Well, we're not getting in there." they're all looking at him like, "You got to boot the other two so we can all fit." It's like, oh, okay. Anyway. Brendan, when did in our lifetime, it used to be, and you know, who knows when this ended or didn't end or whatever. I mean, you just kind of see the constant terms are that Trump continually plays to his base, and obviously he does. Well, okay, now and I'm not saying right, wrong, or anything. I mean, that's what he does, and he's managed to do a pretty darn good job of it, actually. But and his base is 25-30% of the population, whatever mm-hmm. you think it might be. I'm going to say 20 years ago that was a losing deal. I mean, the big bump, and I'm not going to say middle class, but the it would almost look like a normal distribution curve where people were both financially and well, the people on the right always had more on the right side of the curve, not the right side of the aisle. Had always had more assets, so there always mm-hmm. was an upper class, right? But
right.
But in terms of income, there were a lot of people in the middle that were making, I would say, I'll use the term living wage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say politically it was sort of the same way. There was a big middle, and then there was the ends. And the idea was for a candidate, if you were from the left or from the right, you went as far right as you had to or as far left as you had to.
In the primaries.
Yeah, because those are the people that ponied up the money, basically.
Right.
Not even the primary, but like right now. If you're going from house to house in Lincoln Park with 10 people there, $200 a person, and the one guy gets you the check for $2,000, that kind of thing. What do they call that? The angel, not angel people, but the those are the people that figure out really who get nominated. That's what I'm saying. When you keep talking about your rights and duties as a citizen, if you just wait till election day to walk down the block. Well, it's better than not walking down the block, but you're really not helping anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least that's a little too harsh. You're helping very little
mm-hmm.
because you end up with Trump and Hillary.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So if you are able at some level, you would like to, even if it's, I don't know how low you can go, but suppose, you know, I had a cookout and had 20 people over and $100 a throw, you could get any of these people running for Democratic thing or even Republican statewide, you could get them to come over and have a beer and mm-hmm. meet everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. if it's $2,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
If it's $100 a person for 20 people. So that's when you become somewhat of a piece in the formation of the ticket, not just... Now, what you gain from that, I have no idea. Now, if it's $100,000, like some of the people in Lincoln Park are coming up with, that have way more money than we do, you know, that's a whole different program. If you're what do they call them? There's a name for it.
Bundlers?
Bundler, yeah. If you're a bundler, and but
what's
saying,
a bundler?
A bundler is somebody who takes other people's. In other words, if I do,
they
that,
host they yeah. host the party and they invite 100 people or 50 people, each of whom is responsible for coming up with $10,000, $20,000,
or $1,000,
or $1,000.
Yeah, I see
some dollar amount, and they collect all the money, they bundle it, and give it to the campaign.
Right. So I write one check for $100,000, but it's really.
Got
two,
it.
$2,000 from the 50 people that came over. And
but you got to be able to raise that kind of...
Well, you got to say you're going to come over and meet Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But it's $2,000. And this is before he was running for... When he was just thinking about running.
And you can't write the check yourself without having some backup because it exceeds the amount that can be given to a political campaign. So you invite a bunch of your friends over or people that you work with, and you bundle their checks together into one big donation to a political campaign.
Yeah, you probably just hand them a whole stack of 50 checks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So I'm saying you
now AKA a bundle of 50 checks.
Right. A bundle of 50 checks.
Hence the name, yeah.
You put a rubber band around and say, here you go.
And so you're the one who's remembered. You're the one who can probably call the White House. Now, whether you're not going to do whatever you have to do, but at least you'll be able to, they'll pick up the phone. Somebody will there. Maybe the chief of staff will. Depending, if it's a $1 million thing, the president's picking it up. It's $100,000 thing, the chief of staff probably will. Is that right, Brendan? Something, I mean, I don't know.
The dollars may differ, but you're right. At some level, you'll be able to get higher up on the food chain to have your calls returned.
Right. And, so what I'm saying, the idea used to be that like, when Bill Clinton was a master at this, because the guy is totally amoral. I could never do this. He would go to the far left, he'd get money, and then he'd walk back to the middle and do exactly what he damn well pleased.
Mm-hmm.
And without any shred of conscience.
Yep.
Now, George Bush, he went and got money from all these guys. He actually felt he owed them.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave them a war, he gave them a tax cut, all at the same time, which is really the basis of our budget problems today, is going to war on a credit card because he couldn't, I mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously other people have added on to it, but he's the one who really caused it.
Mm-hmm.
And caused it to start, I'll be accurate. But it used to be, all this was a big game to get money, but then you came back to the middle as best you could because that's where, quote, the votes were.
Well, you couldn't, you can't win purely by the far left or the far right. There's just not enough votes to do that. So that's why the theory has always been that when you're running in the primaries, you go to your base, you go to the far extreme, and then for the general election, you come back to the center to try to get those dissatisfied voters in the middle from the other side to vote for you.
Well, okay, and my question to you, both of you guys, and long-winded, but then again, when you start setting the question up, in this day and age, there's no easy answer, is there, to anything. Is there a one-word answer to anything anymore?
No. There's your one-word answer.
Yeah. Yeah. But so now I think it's changed. I think Trump, very shrewdly on his part, because I do not underestimate the man, he goes, if I can hold my 25 or 30% base together, which Barry Goldwater probably had 30% base, and he didn't get another vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's different. The Democrats will put up somebody that is totally untenable to another 20% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to get 50% going to the Democrats, another 20% of the people, maybe somebody like me, who will not vote for Elizabeth Warren no matter what. Now, whether that puts me on the libertarian side again, or I can't imagine myself voting for Trump. I mean, I can't do that. But there's people on the Democratic side, I can't vote for them either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, barring not going down the block or going to Italy or Ireland for that week, I mean, but there's going to be people that can't stand the man, and if the Democrats put up Elizabeth Warren or AOC or somebody, they're going to go, I'm not going that way either. And I can't do that. And
mm-hmm.
So they're going to get 20 to 22% of the vote. They're going to vote for Trump that can't stand the guy.
Or those voters stay home, which increase the percentage of Trump's base. The same number of votes can be somewhere between a 25% to a 51% of the voting population.
Yeah, and I'm not being political. I'm just talking about the landscape has totally changed.
Yeah.
In 1994, you couldn't have done that. You need those votes in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you just look at how many people the Democrats are pissing off with the socialism word all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna say there's gonna be people vote for Trump that absolutely, if he was in front of them, they'd probably run him over.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, he very shrewdly has figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Well, he's a marketer par excellence. He learned how to do it on TV with his television program, and he runs his political campaign the same way.
Yeah, it was. And this is a skill set. When people say these people don't know anything, don't ever think that. I mean, Richard Daley, the former mayor of Chicago, he used to work on the same health club as me. And man, he was a fanatic because he had a. The man's health is not. But everybody knows he had a couple of mild heart issues. I don't know if he ever had a heart attack, but he literally worked out every day because he needed to. And he always kept himself in great shape, and he's friendly as hell, nice guy. And we talk all the time. And it's funny, Brendan, when I went to do the work for Nancy Sheehan, I signed up for his committee. One of my buddies calls me and says, we want somebody to write the financial piece. who better than you? Okay. Although it ended up being a really nice group to meet, and then we'd go out to some place, have burgers and beer, so it was well worth it. The next day, he walks up to me in a club, and he says, "By the way, here you're working for Nancy. Thanks for the help," and walked away. And how the hell he knew that 40 minutes after I got off the phone call in the first meeting, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But he did. Yet, the two of us would sit once in a while, we'd be in the steam room, and we'd have discussions about the selling of the Skyway. We never talked about anything he sold. Or at least I'm politically adept enough to not do that. But, like, the selling of the Indiana Toll Road.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go through the numbers from top to bottom, and he'd look at me like I had two heads. You know, we had a totally different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why he was mayor, and I'm here.
That's right.
You know, I mean, allegedly, Franklin Roosevelt, you could take a ruler and a pen or a pencil and draw a line across the U.S. country at any level you wanted, and he would tell you exactly what county the line went through in every state and how they voted.
Mm-hmm. That is a skill set.
Yeah. Don't think for a second these guys don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as people can berate on Trump or whatever, do not consider this a comparison at all. The same people who obviously think that Hitler was a madman and stuff, if you look at the history of those ages, there had to be how many parties, how many idiots running around in Germany trying to take control in that mess that was the Depression?
Mm-hmm.
And yet he pulled it off, right? Through a combination of intimidation. Whatever the mix was that you needed to do it, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't ever think that there wasn't an amazing skill set of reading people and how to do stuff. Even though he turned out to be, you know, God knows what. And again, do not take any, what I'm saying is all these people have a skill set. And, you know, Solomon had a skill set. I'm talking up and down. So don't think for a second that these guys are pushovers, because they are not.
Well, even in more modern times, Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the Civil Rights Acts in the 1960s.
Yep.
Now, he would have been unbeatable had it not been for the quagmire of Vietnam.
Right.
And even though, if you compare the map today versus the map in 1960, at that time, anything south of the Mason-Dixon line was solidly Democratic. After the civil rights votes in the 1960s under the Johnson administration, they flipped to being solidly Republican.
Yeah, Wayne gave us a long story about that one day, and it's a little known piece of history.
Mm-hmm.
But all those people were, quote, that's what, when Roosevelt ran, he had his party consisted of all the people in the South that were essentially, when you talk all day in the Senate, what do you call it?
Filibusters.
People were filibustering against federal anti-lynching laws.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't possibly find more despicable people on earth that are willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That was half the party, and the other half was like Northern Union people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What do you think happened when those guys got together for a convention? Matt, do you think a few fists might have flown somewhere in the bars in those places?
Well, remember that the reason the South was so solidly Democratic, whatever Democratic meant at the time, but in the Democratic Party, was because of Reconstruction and the Civil War. The Civil War was won by the Republican Party under Lincoln. So the South turned Democratic because they were anti-Lincoln and anti-Lincoln's party. And it wasn't until the Civil Rights legislation came through in the 60s that all of a sudden the Democrats got the short end of the stick and were seen as the non-popular party. And it flipped.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't ever believe or even dream that Roosevelt's base was really that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to pick up an awful lot of the Union people up north.
Yeah.
But he did that kind of on his own. But, I mean, what do you think those people felt voting for him?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they did is made him toss out the child labor in the garment factories in Carolina. I think they were happy about that vote. imagine that, Maddie. Some guy making you not have 13-year-olds working in your place.
For pennies a day.
Yeah, terrible for business. I mean, how do you do something like that?
How are you supposed to make a living?
Yeah, how can you make a legitimate living in this world? But I mean, now I think that the middle is not—it's not there. You don't see Trump getting away from his base. He's happy with the 30%. He's willing to take his chances with 30%. He knows he's going to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I'm going to say what year was Goldwater? You couldn't do that in those days. Goldwater still got his 30%, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The hard right. And mm-hmm. no matter who you have, Walter Mondale got his 30% of the hard left, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you didn't get the middle, you got nothing. Now,
George McGovern had a significant population of his base, but look where it got him.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm saying. So, I mean, but now, are these guys wrong by thinking there is nobody in the middle? Or does either side now not appeal to the middle? They just pick the least worst, and they vote against somebody.
I think there's a lot of truth to that they're voting against somebody or deciding not to vote at all. And every time you don't vote, you're increasing the vote of the person who's on one side or the other and a fanatic.
Except, I'll push back on that a little bit. I'm going to say you're right in 8 states.
Well, it only took 3 to flip the Electoral College in 2016.
Right, but there's nothing. This is why this is my. And I know that the oddest thing about people. Well, there's a lot of odd things about people, but if it's a winner for them, it's justifiable.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then it's not justifiable.
Right.
And anybody who thinks that this Electoral College thing right now is working. It might be working for them.
Mm-hmm.
That this is something going forward that we need to have is insane on a lot of levels. I mean, and it's not just on the Democratic side or the Republican. I mean, there's no reason why, if I'm a Republican, why I should get my ass off the couch in North Dakota knowing that we got a 70-30. There's no reason why for anybody to care if you're a Republican. To make that number 85 instead of 70. And there's no reason to care if you're a Democrat. If I'm only going to get 30 and not 50, then I should try and raise the number to 35-40. I'm not going to visit that state. I'm not going to do anything. Now, of course, Hillary messed up by not visiting a couple of the right states. I get that part. But the point is, you should never feel like you're out of it. And you know what? 70% of the country, for all intents and purposes, now is out of it. Not that it can't change or it can't flip. It can, but by and large, it's not going to, like, anytime soon. So in Illinois, why show up here? I mean, if you're a Democrat, it does you might as well get 50 plus 1 versus 80, right? And if you're a Republican, you don't care if anybody, if you get one vote, let alone, 49%.
Well, see, I disagree with that. I think that you do have to have a chance. And yes, it may be true that in the upcoming election, whenever the next election is, that your argument holds true, that what's the difference between my vote being, having the Democrat or the Republican win in my state by 70-30 or 85-15. It really doesn't matter whether I'm on either the winning side or the losing side. But the more that you get that to a 50-50 vote, the more important it begins. And, the so-called silent majority from years ago has to at some point come in and say, I am going to go to vote. And even if it goes from 15 to 16% because of my vote this time, eventually that will get better to the point where we're...
Two or 3 years before an election or 10 years from now, I will not argue with you one shred. But come next election, we know exactly where 80% of the states are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason to walk down the block.
For that election.
Yes.
But you need to walk down the block and vote because of the next election and the one after that.
Well, okay, but you and I...
I mean, that's my philosophy.
You and I aren't young anymore, and guess what? Neither is Maddie. That's what we were told last week.
Mm-hmm. I'm old now.
Yeah. Well, I won't say that, but... Actually, that's about the perfect age. Maybe 40 is, because you still... If you're in shape, you can still do everything electrically. Athletically, you always did, and you get a little sense.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, you typically have a little bit more money than you do in your 20s and early 30s.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then again, you're not going to spend all of it like you did when you're in your 20s.
Well, yeah. At 20s, I mean, not only did you not make much, but you spent every time you had.
I could never understand, Brendan, talk about a little bit of a segue. I used to work on the truck docks, right, over at mm-hmm. ICX. And I just worked weekends because I was going, this is the greatest thing in the world, when I was going to grad school. So I was actually, I'm out of my... 16 hours I put on the weekend, I think, I'm going to say 12 of them were time and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I was late Friday night and then it was Saturday. And so I was, you know, when I was making $9 an hour and actually time and a half, so say a blended rate of about 12.
Mm-hmm. Which was good money at that time.
Oh, in 1975? Yeah. Yes. And so I'm picking up a check for, you know, $150. These guys, they're there the rest of the week, and they're picking up a check, $300, say, which in 19, you know, take-home pay, I'll use a Southside term. And this is on a Friday night. Now, on Sunday night, because when I was on break, I'd work, you know, the whole week, these guys are sitting there bitching and moaning how they're out of dough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, say, a beer is 40 cents, a pitcher's a buck and a half. These are not the kind of guys that are taking their girlfriend to, you know, there was no Gibson's at the time, let's say Eli's, and spending $100 on dinner. They wouldn't know how to do that. They didn't have any clothes. They had a crummy old, where the hell were they blowing $300 in 2 days? They must have been going to the track. Because they're borrowing money on Monday night or Sunday night. I'm like, how did these guys
They had to have been going to the track.
They had to be
going. No way, yeah.
I mean, it had to be, or baseball games or football games or something. I'm like, or poker. But I'm thinking, how do you blow $300 in 2 days when a shot and a beer is 80 cents? I mean, that's a lot of booze.
Uh-huh.
And none of them looked like they had a stitch of clothes. I mean, people blow through dough. It's amazing. What was our buddy Nick say, Manny? 90% of the money I spent on fast cars, booze, and women.
The rest that I wasted.
The rest he wasted.
That was a quote from Tug McGraw when he signed his first $1 million contract as a pitcher.
Yeah, he must have been wild to party with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you want to stay with him too late, but
I don't think you could stay with him too late.
I talk about people. I ran into Tommy Thayer out in Arizona with all his buddies from the Arizona Wranglers. This is when he was that year between Notre Dame and the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were nuts, and they wanted us to come out drinking afterward, and we're like, oh, come on. Because everything in Arizona closes at, what, 1 o'clock or 12 or something? Thank God. So they say, you guys got to come with us. No, no, no. He goes, I'll call you when I come to Chicago. Sure enough, there's somebody's paging me in the first stop lounge. Thank God I was in the trading corps floor. He wanted me to come out, and whoever, not just me, they were going to all these bars in Cicero after the game because they had pushed off their private plane to like 4 in the morning. And I go, wow. So you want me to show up at 11, drink all night with you guys at some Cicero bar that I've never even close to being to, and you guys head for the plane, and I somehow make it home? I'm like, thank God I missed that call. I mean, I bet it would have been a story to tell, but still, I mean, those guys, man.
I don't know. 90%. You don't want to be wasting. It sounds like that was a wasted opportunity.
Might have been a wasted opportunity. But I saw these guys in Arizona. They didn't have any, I don't think they had a pee test, shall we say. I never saw bigger guys in my life. I mean, these guys, I think every one of them was roided to the max. I mean, I don't know about Tommy, but, some of these guys, I mean, I was 6'4", 230 at the time, and I was a kid compared to some of these guys. 6'7", like 300 and some pounds. I mean, monster human beings. And they were roided up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then they start whacking each other in the bar, giving each other forearm shivers that a normal person would have, like, flown out the front door. And I'm like, well, I'm not so sure I could go party with this group, Eddie, without an escape valve somewhere. But because I think they were in for the long haul. But anyway, I mean, those are sort of.
Thayer lost a lot of weight when he retired. Yeah. He was not one of the guys who really got big and sloppy. He trimmed down dramatically.
He's a surfer.
Yeah.
But he's like, I bet he's 225 now.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy's a real nice guy and a real bright guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say he probably. If there is such a thing, Maddie, he probably holds a record of most, can I use the term competitive, football games he played in a 12-month period or 15-month period. He played his whole senior year at Notre Dame, then got drafted by, was that the World Football League?
Was it World Football or USFL? It
might have been USFL. The World Football League was one before then.
Mm-hmm.
Where the Chicago Fire. The Chicago didn't have a team in the USFL, I don't believe. Anyway, his John's brother Pete played for Sacramento.
Yeah, and that was where Herschel Walker went.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he played their whole season, which was a spring season,
mm-hmm.
and then the
they went to the Bears.
They went right to the Bears because their league folded.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bears drafted him in the third round, ignorantly not even realizing that he'd already signed a contract.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he goes for them, gets all the coaching, gets all that experience, and then 6 weeks later, he's starting for the Bears, already playing a whole professional season.
So the Bears, right after college season.
Yeah, so the Bears totally lucked up, and he didn't get hurt the whole mm-hmm. way through, which was somewhat of a miracle. So that's, 12 games at Notre Dame, probably 14 with those guys, 26, and then 16 with the Bears. 42 games? Wow. at that level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, I can't even conceive of that. Can you, Eddie? I mean, good Lord.
And surprisingly, he's still mobile today.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of those guys make it through a season or two seasons, and then they're beat up for the rest of their lives.
Well, he was a pulling guard. He was, I mean, it's, a lot of it's luck. You don't have somebody falling back on you.
Yeah.
I mean, Tommy was always kind of the aggressor. He was a pulling guy flying out. If you're the guy delivering the blow, which isn't the same football, any play you can get hurt. Walter Payton was kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho. But, I mean, what do you think between the combination, I'll ask you, Brendan, as somebody who's kind of a non-trader but an investor, the combination of what you see in the politics, what you see in the government's essentially, I'll say, connection with some of these firms. I mean, right now, I think this Boeing is hanging in there because people feel that the government will bail them somehow.
I agree.
And
they're too big to fail.
And when does that, is there a point to which they either can't, or it's too big of a nut, or do you want to not just, I mean, right now, I don't have a lot of clients, in fact, I don't have any clients with Boeing, but if I did, I'd say, let's at least protect a little bit of it. I'm not going to say sell it. I wouldn't have a buy here on it. If your entire nut was 5,000 shares of Boeing or 6,000 or whatever it is, I think you need to protect that sum. Cause I mean, stuff can happen here.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got a 5-year backlog. You know, even if they lose a year of it, so what? As long as the other people are willing to move up,
mm-hmm.
but you never get a hole in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you don't go from 57 planes a month down to 10 back up to 57. That's a real, you know, that's an issue. I mean, mm-hmm. a company can't, it's hard to do that. So, I mean, it's an interesting case study. With all the pieces of information coming at them and the money coming out the other end, basically, out the behind end, now you've got these planes out there. Are people going to come and plunk down the check and you fly them back from the storage facility and somebody gets in it, hand you a check for $110 million and off you go? Is that all going to start happening 5 times a day by 4th of July? I mean, these are big questions here, and they just say, no problem, at 377. I don't know if you can do that, Brendan. I mean,
I'm going to use an analogy for marathoning. And in a marathon race, you can always say that a marathon is very, very easy until it becomes very, very, very hard. And sometimes it can turn just within a quarter of a mile, that you go from having a nice, easy pace to all of a sudden you're struggling to take a next step. And I think the same thing is true in the business world with something like Boeing. And Boeing has already seen one blip of that. With the MAX, the 737 MAX, after the first plane went down in Indonesia, it was, you know, nobody knew what really happened. Even after the second airliner went down, it was, you know, we'll fix this. This was an aberration, and then it grew to a point where they could no longer say we can keep our planes in the air. Everybody, even the FAA in the United States, had to shut them down. It was a dramatic, instantaneous drop that came out of really sort of came out of nowhere. And likewise, we saw the same thing with the financial crisis in 2008 with the banks. They were so good, so big, and all of a sudden the crisis hit and it turned on a dime and everything crashed. In that case, and you look at the auto industry, you look at the banks at those times, they were bailed out by the government. So I think that to your point, will Boeing get bailed out? Probably. Because who's their competition? Airbus?
I mean, a little bit with Bombardier and...
Yeah, but Bombardier doesn't have the big
right.
two-lane, two-aisle jets that go international. They've got much smaller planes. They're not really a player the way that Airbus is. I mean, really, in the world, you've got two airplane manufacturers. Well,
are you giving China an opening, is what you're...
Well, you are giving China an opening, and perhaps even Russia to develop something. But I think primarily China, and I think that is opening the door. But right now, with only the two competitors of Air, which Airbus, by the way, being funded by a lot of government support in Europe, unlike the United States, where Boeing is a private company, but would be bailed out, I think, if things really started looking dire.
Well, I mean, but you have to, as an investor, you have to, I mean, that's what you're supposed to be doing, is valuing companies, which is very, very hard to do now because the government's so involved. How would you ever dreamt of that $14 billion thing for B-52s? How would you even know that was on the drawing board? I mean, good Lord. But, I mean, I've got the stock $375 roughly. It's the same price it was last October. And long before any of this happened, and it's when did the one plane go down? The stock made it down to 290 in January of this year. Last thing I would ever do is say sell Boeing or anything, because that's not what I do, especially not on the air. But you look at this, if you have this investment as your core holding, an awful lot of stuff and arrows are coming your way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of them are missing the target, and some of them, maybe the target, you know, is stainless steel and none of the arrows will get through. But, you know, again, you have to look and say, what is the deal here? The other one I put kind of in the same spot, Brendan, and I mean, Maddie's way more, you know, astute on this than me. Is the world's sleepiest stock, Disney, all of a sudden is a roaring monster.
Mm-hmm.
And all these other people, Disney and Netflix are going up together. Well, I don't know. Are there two winners there? What about all these other guys? I mean, the other pieces of the world that people were saying, oh, don't worry, Apple's going to be a player. You know, Amazon's a player. Everybody's a player in this area. And yet, I don't know. I don't see how they all can win at once when the average income isn't going up very much. I mean, I don't see how everybody in that industry is up 20% a year from now when the income in the country grows by two.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, you know, the market right now is valuing things like that. I mean, is Boeing going to be? But that's what you're supposed to do as an investor, as in what I do, which is invest for people. I mean, right now, if I had a big cap fund, and imagine, let's take one simple. Say it took the OEX, which is 100, the S&P 100, okay, which is what I used to trade, or the top 50 stocks. Say you take the top 50, which probably makes more sense. And if you look at the weightings that S&P has, and this is what people do. People wonder how big cap Bob does this stuff. Well, if you were to, you know, drop $3 billion on PTI, and I'll go hire Brendan too. If we had to sprinkle around $3 billion, I'd need some help. Let's say we pick the top 50 stocks, Brendan, and all we do is go to the OEX page and say Boeing is 1.95% of the top 50 stocks. Okay, now we're going to have some Boeing in our portfolio if we're big cap Bob, but we may say, based on our assessment of the situation, instead of being 1.95, we're going to be 1.4 Boeing. We're going to slightly underweight it. Or you may say, look, these guys got problems. I mean, they don't know it yet, but we might be 1%. We may take the extreme move and have a none, although probably not, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because what we're trying to do is to be just a little different. So at the end of the year, the Brendan and Chief 50 stock index is up, you know, 15.4%, and the other guys are up 12.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not doing puts and calls. We're not doing anything. We're not trying to protect anybody against a move. But we're saying if the market's down 20%, we're going to be down 17 because our picks are better. And that's what big cap people do and mid cap people do. And all you do is say, all right, we got Apple. You know, this thing's got a run up from 150. Apple should be 4% of our portfolio. You know what? At this price, let's make it 3.5. Or guess what? You know, Apple's got some new product nobody knows about. Well, how would we know about it if nobody knew about it? But we're going to be 6% Apple. Somewhere along the line, for everyone you underweight, you got overweight, right? So at the end of the day, our 50 stocks is going to look somewhat different in the weighting than the 50 stocks if we just had S&P's top 50. Now, whether we're right or whether we're wrong is, you know, time will tell at the end of the year. But the interesting part, Brendan, is people, they get in love with these stocks. And if I had to criticize all the, this goes back to my years at the University of Chicago. Even then, the research was, if you went with a mutual fund guy, or in our case, big cap, whatever we want to call it, if they have a really hot year, virtually the entire retail community and most of the brokers you deal with will say, you got to go with Thomas because he had a hot 2018. And virtually every study, going back to when I was in school about mutual funds, is you want to buy the guy who had the bad year the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time, if you and I make it to the end of the year and all of a sudden we beat the S&P by 2.5%, which, by the way, is pretty darn spectacular, right? We're doing the same stuff. No calls, mm-hmm. no puts, no protection, no covered rights. It's pretty darn good. You and I probably, actually, we don't have much of an ego. We might spend January 1st sitting in the office instead of being hungover, saying, okay, last year was good, but this year let's go all through, let's whole new sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. Where are we and start over? Most people don't.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, Apple was good to us last year, we can't get rid of our Apple.
That's right.
And that's why you very seldom get, you do get people that are good 2-3 years in a row. Those are the people you gotta watch out for in terms of they know what they're doing. Because then you might say, Apple had a good year last year, that ain't happening again. So last year Apple should have been 4%, we were 5. I'm thinking this year we might be 3.5 at best, like that type of thing. Or this one that was an absolute pig last year, maybe we should up our pig, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, but even that kind of logical stuff, most places don't do. But that's all you're asking people to do in these big cap funds, and they're not, or mid cap, they're not trying to, if Trump screws up and the market's down 40%, you're just going to be down 35.
Mm-hmm.
There's no safety there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a little bit. I mean, maybe, right? So, I mean, you're not helping anybody, really. But I've never seen politics and the market. Well, I guess I did back when Volcker was doing his thing, because he was the market.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, you know, just when you see politics impacting the market like right now, here's one caveat, Russell and Maddie and anybody who's listened. I'm listening. For a long period, and it might still be, name me the single biggest 3-day rally in terms of percentage terms like the market ever had. There might be some now after 9/11 when they reopened and, you know, that kind of thing. So there might have been some since then, but for a long period of time, you will never guess. Think of the worst economic policy in your lifetime.
I don't know.
Tick, tick, tick. Maybe well, before your lifetime.
I know the answer because you've said it about 30 times on
all right.
the show.
But Brandon,
go ahead.
Well, Nixon's wage and price controls.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The market rallied for 3 straight days, and it probably was the single worst economic policy I've ever. And 6 months later, it was in the crapo.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make that 2 months later. So you sort of have to be careful when people do stuff on a you know, the governmental end, and the market rallies or goes down, because it's not necessarily the long term and how that ends up. But anyway, Manny, we only got 30 seconds. Where do you think, who's the winner here in the Disney, Netflix, and the rest of these guys, and from your point of view? Can Disney just catch up to these guys that fast?
Well, they have to put a product out first.
Well, they already have, and they tell you how it's going to price, and the stock's up like 20%.
Has that actually been released?
I don't think you can actually buy it yet.
Yeah, I don't think they've even put it out yet, so I don't know who's the winner or who's a loser.
Well,
but
if you have Disney stock, you're a big winner.
So far, yeah.
SP Futures is now up 4. As if it is up 11, we cannot stay down in this market. Come back with Mr. John Neal.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice.
At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brennan Cronin, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Matty, you can't write fiction like this. I mean, anybody who says they can't get up in today's world not be entertained by the headlines. Elon Musk, any other car than a Tesla in 3 years will be like owning a horse. There you go. Trump vows to reciprocate against EU tariffs after Harley-Davidson reports 26% drop in profits and is blaming him on tariffs. Can Trump start the tariff fight?
But which tariffs are they referring to? The U.S. tariffs or
evidently,
the European tariffs?
Evidently, because we did some stuff to Europe. Who knows who was first?
Well, I know. That's my question.
Yeah. Well, Europe evidently had put a tariff on Harley motorcycles.
Right.
So now
in
we're
response
saying,
to what Trump did.
Yeah. So now, well, yeah. And Trump would say that he was justified in they. Mm-hmm. So now Harley's blaming this on the drop in profit, the tariff, and now he's gonna go back at Europe with another one because
he's gonna fix it.
Oh boy. SP futures up $3. NASDAQ futures up $8.75. We got Coca-Cola came out with pretty good earnings too. They're trading up $1.34. Like I said before, Twitter is up like $2. So we got some good earnings this morning. We're better than expected. Let's put it that way because everybody's looking for bad earnings. And anytime you have a quarter like that, that's a quarter you kind of want to be long because everybody comes out with better. Say Dow futures up 73. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 20.1%, FTSE up 34.5%, CAC around down 5, call that flat, so not much going on over there. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 41, it's 0.1%, Shanghai down 16.5%, Hang Seng unched. Oil, again, story today, but not only it's up 11 cents, so it's not much of a story. It was up more earlier, 65.66, been up 14.74.18, so that spread is actually down to $8.50, so... And that spread continues to go from like 7.50 to 10.50, and we're kind of right in the middle of it. Arbob Gas actually down a fraction, 0.0005 cents. Wow. 2.129 is the number there. We've got gold, can't get out of its own way, down 270, 1274. Silver down 8 cents, 1489. Andy, we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building on the Edens and Kennedy. Same on the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside Expressways too. But no accidents to report. No disabled vehicles. No significant issues. Just some slower travel times due to some rain in the area that's causing folks to drive a bit slower than otherwise. But everything looking good as far as accidents are concerned. Off the expressways, a couple of issues. Relatively minor. Northwest side, Foster Avenue at Harlem. There's some malfunction traffic lights at that intersection, and that's causing delays as folks navigate through that. Just east of there, there was a structure fire overnight at Pulaski and Ainsley, which is a block north of Lawrence. That fire has been put out, but crews are still on the scene there as they work to get that cleaned up. So that's causing some traffic delays on Lawrence and Pulaski. On the south side, Harlem at 44th, there is a crash. No issues on the expressways, though, and everything else looking good out there. Weather today, much cooler than it's been the last few days, and cloudy as well. We'll reach a high of just 55 at the lakefront. Could touch the low 60s further inland, but much cooler than it's been. Right now it's overcast and 48 degrees with some scattered showers in the area, going up to a high of 55. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 88 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 65. In sports, the White Sox took it to the Orioles in Baltimore last night. 12-2 was the final. Diamondbacks blew out the Pirates 12-4 in Pittsburgh. Cubs were off. They welcome the first place Dodgers to Wrigley tonight. That's a 7:05 Chicago time first pitch.
Jake. Okay, I have a question for you. I don't know why, but I was watching some of the Sox game last night, and I don't know why I like watching the Sox. I have, if you obviously watch the Cubs, or you watch even Milwaukee is doing pretty darn good, you ever watch the Dodgers, you see places pretty full, you know, especially if there's nice weather. If it's crummy weather, you know, you're not gonna, you got issues anywhere, but some of these other games I'm watching, obviously we watch Boston more than we need to with the Tripoli, but some of these other parks, I don't think I've ever seen, even in the 60s, when I used to go to Wrigley Field on a weekday, I've never seen crowds like this. Where I'm talking about people you're looking at where the top, the first 20 rows, one out of 10 seats is filled. I mean,
those White Sox day games last week couldn't have had 1,000 people in the park.
Yeah, they were pretty sparsely attended.
That was partly weather, obviously, but man, there's no one there. You could hear the individual fans having conversations on TV.
Yeah, Eric was saying if somebody yelled out there, you like heard it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as stupid as whatever people yell at games. Anyway, is there something going on here? I mean, I know a lot of those seats are the top 12 rows or 15, you hope, are purchased mostly by corporations, but I don't know. I mean, last night, I don't think the weather was that bad in Baltimore. If there was 1,000 people there, I don't know where they were. I mean, I could be exaggerating, but you're right. It's a couple of the ones down in Florida. I've seen the Red Sox play, and even the Red Sox are a draw.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these games, there's nobody there.
I mean, Tampa Bay nobody. Is horrible for attendance.
Not those guys, I don't
even when they were good.
But I mean, Yankee Stadium. I mean, there's a weather thing there going, and those tickets are probably all owned by corporations, and they say don't even try and give them away if it's 40 degrees and misting. But, you know, I there are people, again, I'm not going to go old on everybody, but boy, if 30 years ago, if somebody handed me, or most anybody I knew, like 10th row Yankee game, I almost wouldn't care if it was a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd at least go for a few innings so you couldn't stand it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Yankee Stadium has got, you know, a little bit of rain, but, am I just seeing stuff early in the year, or because of these scout seats and so forth where the people have a place down there to eat out of the weather that it just looks like there's nobody there and there really is or something? Am I just missing this or?
Well, it looks like so far this year we're up compared to last year. Last year was the first time that Major League Baseball dipped below 70 million in attendance since 2003. They were down 4% 2018 from 2017. They went down to 69,625,000.
But they missed how many games early in the year?
It was a lot of that.
They blamed it on historically bad weather, where they had last April included 28 postponements and 102 games played in temperatures under 50 degrees, most ever, both categories. So so it's no surprise that 2019 attendance is up compared to last year. But you know, they typically draw in the 70 to 75 million, every year they average about 13 teams will go up in attendance, and or between 13 and 15 will go up in attendance, and between 13 and 15 will go down in attendance, typically based on weather and based on their record.
I'm gonna guess that the scrunching up at the top is getting worse. I mean, the Cubs, since they've added how many more seats, now are a 3 million person team versus two. So it's almost not fair. It's fair, obviously, because those are the numbers. But I'm just wondering if the Cubs go into three, and the Dodgers having a good year, and the Bo Sox having a good year, and that kind of thing. Are we hiding something else? Are we hiding
those teams draw no matter what, whether they're good or not?
But now, because of the expansion of the park, the drawing is an extra million people. Is what I'm saying? Is the bottom 10 people in the park getting to the point where people are scratching their head? That's what I'm sort of seeing. And if the tickets are sold, I don't think they care. What's the old acronym? Today's no shows, tomorrow's no sell, or something along?
Well, I think that's only true for a couple of franchises, the Cubs being one. When the Cubs went through their teardown a couple of years ago, they were a national draw because of the WGN Superstation and the ethos that they had built up over their team as the lovable losers. And Theo came in with the history of what he did in Boston and the promise that they would be better. It also turned out that in 2016, of course, they won the World Series. So there's something there. But I think that for a lot of other stadiums, and, you know, there's always the argument that the White Sox fans don't care because they want to see real baseball, and they'll support good teams but not a bad team. Don't believe in that completely, but, I mean, that's the argument. But when you get to places like Tampa Bay or even a place like Kansas City, you don't have the goodwill with the fan base. You don't have the attraction of a Wrigley Field that you had with the Cubs, or Boston and Fenway, or Yankee Stadium being the Yankees and being New York. Those are aberrations, even though the teardowns of their teams eventually brought them to a World Series. Houston did the same thing. But those other teams don't have the wherewithal to fall back on the way that the Cubs did. But even the Cubs their ticket waiting list went down dramatically in those years before the 2016.
I think it was gone.
Yeah, they had used up all that goodwill, and it wasn't until 15, which was a year earlier than anticipated, that they had the turnaround. And I also think that the Cubs would be a really interesting to see after the current team kind of fades and their window of opportunity closes. Will they be able to maintain this, or will it go back to something like you see on the South Side, where if they're not winning, they're not going to draw?
I don't think with a destination park that'll ever happen. I mean, could they go back to 2 million? Yeah, I don't think they're going back to a million.
No, I don't think they're going back to a million, but I do think that there can be a drop-off that you hadn't seen before.
The Cubs in 2018 were fifth in attendance in Major League Baseball. They averaged 38,793, but by percentage, they were fourth. They averaged, third. They averaged 94.3% capacity in tickets sold. St. Louis, number one. Boston, number two. San Francisco, number four. Houston, number five.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yankees, number six, surprisingly, they dropped down that much. But it's what a surprise. The top eight teams in attendance all made the playoffs.
Right. And what happened to Houston?
Except for San Francisco.
What were the numbers for Houston a few years ago when they were doing their
tear-down no
between 2005 and 2015? What were their percentages?
Yeah, I mean, I can actually pull that up relatively quickly. But last year they averaged 37,000 fans a game, which was, you know, almost as much as the Cubs, and top five in attendance. Whereas, like, let's go back to, like, 2014, Houston was 27th out of 30. They averaged 21,000 fans.
That's
So, I mean, you put a winner on the field. It's pretty simple. It's not that hard to understand.
Houston has, you know, massive corporations down there. I'm going to say they're...
Yeah, and they went from no attendance to one of the best.
21,000. I'm going to say their season ticket load probably never dropped below 16, 17, which is pretty darn good. I bet the Sox are like four or five. Baltimore, I bet it. Pittsburgh, I bet it's five. The season ticket, a little bit. A full season ticket package for somebody.
2012 Houston, 19,000.
Yeah, which means they're
28th out of 30.
But the number I like to look at, if I possibly can, the absolute most horrible weather day, you know, 42 and sleep, they only play in the team once. The whatever they announced that day is probably pretty close to the season ticket load.
So in 2018, Miami, by far, is the lowest in attendance, and they only average 10,000 fans a game.
What did Baltimore, I mean, after last night? I mean, it wasn't that bad of a night.
Well, I can last 2019, I'm not even looking at because it's only been a handful of games. But in 2018, Baltimore averaged 20,000 fans, and they were 26 out of 30. Miami was the worst by far, 10,000 fans. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable. They only drew 800,000 for the season. Tampa was the second worst. They averaged 14,000 fans, and they drew 1.1 million for the season. Pittsburgh was third worst. They averaged 19,000 fans, and they drew 1.4 million.
Well, the Cubs last time I was around Fenway, I've never been in it, but I'm going to say the Cubs are the only team in baseball that probably gets a 10,000 person walk-up crowd combined with a 15,000 person L crowd. I bet
Fenway does too. I bet there's
Is
that many people live around Fenway?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Right. And it's a destination city.
And they have the whole outdoor area around the park, like where the city gave them the entire neighborhood.
Yeah, okay. They close down the street just like the Cubs wanted to do. They close down the streets all around the park. One side has an expressway near it, but the other parts are Yawkey Way and there's another street that I can't remember on the other side of the park that is just shut down on game days.
And it's all, it's just an outdoor
street
beer
vendors,
garden.
Street vendors and restaurants. And
that's what the Cubs wanted to do because they came from Boston, Theo and those guys, and the city wouldn't let them do that. Not even close. I mean, they won't let them do it.
Well, they still got a lot of stuff going on the other side. They gave them that property for
nothing like Boston.
Right. Nope. Well, I mean, the street by, it's got the same formula as Pittsburgh. That whole street shuts down.
Yeah, they just don't have any fans.
Well, but I mean, Pittsburgh doesn't own all those bars, but it's really nice.
And Pittsburgh has arguably the best stadium in baseball, from what I've read.
I think it's real nice.
I haven't been there yet.
It's the closest one to Wrigley.
But they had a lot of years with bad teams.
Yeah,
and it's a small city.
They're completely dependent on whether the team's good.
Yeah.
I mean,
I went there one night, and this is odd. Of course, just being one person. What do they say? He travels fastest who travels alone. I would always just go and get a ticket off somebody coming in. I would never wait in a line. Well, Pittsburgh has such a small season ticket load. They're like, is nobody selling an extra ticket? So it's a gorgeous Friday night, and they got like three ticket guys open. Probably 100 people in line, and people are pouring across the river. I'm thinking, I'm not going to get into this game. Finally, one guy, I got my finger in the air, not the middle one, and the guy says, "Yeah, my buddy's sick. Here, give me $20. You can sit. I got two seats by the bullpen. They're real nice." So we go out there, and everybody knew everybody. Everybody knew the vendors. I had a real nice time. But it's a beautiful party. It's very much like Wrigley, Manny, because there's only one level of skyboxes. So the upper deck is very low, sort of like Wrigley. You know, it has a little bit of an overhang.
Yeah.
So if you like the old style parks, most of the new parks get that look that they're impersonal and you can't even see the upper deck people because there's two layers of skyboxes. So
Pittsburgh wins the award every year now for best stadium in baseball.
Yeah, it's real nice.
In 2015, the year they made the playoffs and the Cubs beat them in that one game wild card, they drew 2.5 million fans and averaged 31,000 a game. That was 15th out of 30.
And I'll bet they averaged 10,000 walk up a night.
It's possible. I mean, they're low. You know, when they were really bad last year, they still drew 20,000 or 19,000.
But it's the equivalent if Sox Park would have been built like just south of us here, where if it's a gorgeous night and all of a sudden, screw it, I'm not going home, let's walk down to the park, you know, and you could actually walk, you know, you walk across the, I don't know what river it is, if it's an angle here, one of them, you essentially walk across the Clemente Bridge and you walk in. It's got to be half mile. And,
that would have been cool if the White Sox were like in the South Loop.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where you wouldn't have to move your car or anything like that. You know, you could walk down or have a little people mover of some kind. But I guess what I'm saying is when you, economically, if you're an owner or if you study this stuff like, like we do on Stocks and Jacks, as we try and do, is do the business side of sports. You've got a lot of phenomenons going. I mean, and the Cubs, more than most, have pushed the envelope on just how high you can go.
The Cubs are the only team in baseball that, in my opinion, maybe the Red Sox, that will draw whether they're good or not. Everyone else is completely dependent on whether they're good. And I mean, it's black and white right in front of me. I can pull up, you can tell me a team, I'll tell you what year they made the playoffs, strictly based on
their attendance. But now, careful with that, because as we talked about earlier.
Couldn't be easier.
With the tickets, you gotta look, there's no way on earth, if we didn't get one extra person, because we absolutely sucked, if you and I own the Nationals, and we'll bring Brendan with us, if we own the Nationals, we don't make money.
Right, because of the location of Washington, D.C., and all of the lobbyists.
There won't be a soul there, but every skybox is bought and paid for, and every nice seat in the place, you get to check January 2nd. So even if you got nobody else, you're a winner there.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, and I'll bet their season ticket load is 19-20, and you could have five people there, and they're going to announce 20. And you could have, the skyboxes, they're going to be, the people are going to be getting their ribs and hot dogs, even if nobody shows up. Because it's that way. Yankee Stadium's the same way. I mean, name an advertising firm in New York that doesn't have something at Yankee Stadium. How could you not? So you've got that going in the big. But you do have to wonder on the edge. I mean, if somebody is sitting in a bar by Wrigley, not that we're all sitting in bars all the time, somebody walks in and hands you two tickets, and you go, "I'm paying $5 for beer right here, and the thing's 70 inches. I'm not going there and paying 12. Going through the metal detector and." You know, getting the cavity search and walking in there and paying 12, I'm comfortable right here. I mean, you wonder if some of that's going on. I mean, when you can't even give the tickets away, it appears. What I'm seeing is the people that
you think you can't give Cubs tickets away. you got your
no, no.
You're
I'm,
a little
I'm
off
not,
on
I'm
that.
Not, I'm not talking about
Washington. By the way, when they're good, they average about 2.6 million.
Right.
This year, they are going to be horrible in attendance because their team stinks. And they're off to a bad start right now.
And they don't have Bryce Harper.
Yeah, and so you're right about, yeah, they might, maybe their skybox are sold, but maybe tomorrow they won't be. Right now they're only averaging 28,000 fans.
Right, so what I'm saying is don't.
Because their team's bad.
If they go from 2.6 to 2.1.
That's a big loss. I don't think the owners notice that.
I understand it, but don't assume they're losing 25% of their revenue. I think they're probably losing 10 to 15 of it.
You might be right, but I bet it's closer to 25.
And they're better. They obviously would be much happier with the 2.5 because they eat and they drink, right? I mean, I'm not saying you want less, but
I think they're going to be horrible this year. They're going to be lucky to draw 2 million, and then next year it's going to be even worse. And then it's going to get to the point where they're in the bottom five unless they make a big splash and become good again.
I will bet you that their revenue, if you
teams
get,
have left there how many times? Three times?
Twice.
Right, so teams have left twice, so they've. This is their third time that they've had.
That was long before.
I'm just saying, if that team's not good, they'll leave again.
All right, so now when you said that, you know what you opened yourself up for? Name me a city that had two NBA teams they both left before they got one that stuck.
The Bulls.
Now look, you can't get those tickets away from these corporations if the Bulls win one game.
That's true.
Once you get into that, I mean. Agree with me or disagree with me on this, Brendan. I'm going to say that if Pittsburgh has a crowd of 35,000 people and Washington has a crowd of 18, that the gross in Washington's bigger for that night.
Are you thinking because of the price of the food
high-end
in the...
Yeah. No, the high-end, they got twice as many skyboxes at least.
Mm-hmm.
At least. And they probably have way more high-end seats that are $100-some a pop to lobbyists are paying for.
Mm-hmm. That's possible. I
think that's fair.
I don't know what the spread is. I don't know if it's double like that or whatever. But I also know that it costs them a lot more. Their costs are a lot higher than Pittsburgh's.
Yeah,
so
probably.
If you're talking about actual profit.
Well, if you're talking about net, there's a difference.
I think it's a big deal if you're drawing half as many fans.
Mm-hmm. And look what the Cubs did to the people behind home plate. They basically sent everybody a bill. For those that don't know, the section is just to the left of where mine was, 422, 423 maybe. Used to be, some of the nicest seats in baseball. Upper deck, and they probably were, they're $70 a ticket, maybe? Something like that? I'm guessing, 65?
Yeah, probably.
And these are people that still, buy the tickets themselves, most of them. Split them up among their buddies, and they basically sent them, they made those, what they call it now? Crown Royal section or something section. They sent him a bill saying your normal four seats would be $38,000. Now they're $100,000. Pay up if you want them. I don't think there's any place for those people to go, man. I don't know where you put two sections in Wrigley, season ticket wise that are decent. Where are you going to put them? Anyway.
Well, as many seats as they've added, and they've added a lot, they've taken away some seats, too.
Oh, they've taken away some seats there, but they're three times the price.
Yeah.
So, now, those seats, that is a big move on their part, because now you're talking about more corporate seats. That group is not buying those seats.
No.
There's no way somebody paying $60 a throw now goes for $250 a throw. That's a lot. Plus, realistically, if you're going someplace, how many nights, Maddie, you're slender, you work out a lot, you're in good shape, how many nights in a row could you go to the White Sox scout seats and feel like you have to eat the whole place dry because you paid for it and drink all night? I mean, how many nights in a row can you, even with your constitution?
For me, zero nights in a row. I would never want to do that.
You'd never want to go?
I mean, if someone invited me, I'd go for free. I would never pay for that.
But my point is how many nights personally can you do that?
Yeah.
I tell you what, you go one night, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You go in, it's a huge buffet, and you walk out, and guys are bringing you drinks, and there's a big dessert bar afterward. There's a bar, and you wait until all the other idiots are out of the parking lot, and you walk out, and there's your car, and you hop in, and you go, and hopefully you get somebody driving you home.
I do it at the Bears game like once a year. My buddy has it, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Because they keep it open for an hour after the game ends, so, you know, you miss all the traffic, too.
My buddy was a friend of the late old man Wirtz, and he had his little bar at the old stadium. And we'd pile in there afterward. Get a load of this. I'd have to come from the south side. I was on the trading floor. The only time I wore a sport coat was to go to a Hawk game. Because you had to dress up to be in Wirtz's. You'd go out, you'd watch the game, you'd come back in, and you're boozing there. The only guy there was Wirtz, who sat at the end of the bar. He had all these people in their hospitality suite. It wasn't no food, really. It was just booze. He was just a booze guy. And he would sit there.
Well, that was his business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Plus...
Plus, you also could not see the games on TV.
Right. And he would sit at the end of the bar with his black and white TV that couldn't have been 15 inches because it was all closed circuit and it was fuzzy. And he never went out to the game. He sat there and drank. You came in, he never said hello to anybody. The only guy that sat next to him once in a while was his buddy Pulley. Pulley. Remember him? That was the general manager forever.
Pulford? Bob Pulford?
Pulley. And he'd sit there and he never said, why you would have a hospitality suite for 40 people that you never said hello to any one of them before. He was not the most social duck on earth. Let's say that's a fair assessment, but I always had a good time. And we'd wait till an hour after the game and you'd walk out and there's your car right by the door. The guy parked it for you and you're good to go. You're right, Maddie. It's fun doing that. But I mean, how do you, if you're, I guess where I'm going with this is in any business, ours, you know, in a brokerage, you always keep your eye on stuff will happen at the edges. I mean, if you raise your beer prices by $1, do you sell the same amount? Do you sell 2% less? Do you sell 3% less? I mean, when you start doing those kinds of, it implies that you're constantly picking up these studies. And I would love to be in the back room of Major League Baseball where they start talking about no-shows. Was it really the weather? Was it not the weather? Was it now because we raised the price of beers $2? Does it mean that people would rather be somewhere else? And if somebody gives them a ticket, they'll show up. It's a nice day. If not, they say the hell with it. I'm always curious as to about what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, you guys seem like you are too. I mean, what do you think the state is? You think it's still healthy like it was 2 years ago, or healthier? Just the game in general. Both of you guys, I mean, or either one of you guys, for that matter.
Go ahead, Brandon.
I'll talk at once.
You're asking, do we think this state of baseball
state of
is
Major
healthy?
League Baseball
is that your question?
Is gaining popularity, losing popularity, and all this stuff together is a million variables, is what we're talking about.
I think overall it's losing popularity, and I think it's due to a couple of reasons. One, the games take too long right now, and not just because of the natural flow of the games, but because of the number of visits and switching of players, pitchers primarily. I also think that so many teams are tanking right now with the Cubs model and the Houston Astros model to think of a couple more years in advance is keeping fans away from it. And, you know, when you look at the fast action of football, for example, I think baseball is being hurt by comparison.
Well, do you think basketball's the same thing with the tanking piece?
Yeah.
Manny, you agree or no?
I think tanking is bad for sports.
Yep.
Absolutely. But it makes sense for organizations to do it, that, the way the model's set up.
Right.
So long as only one or two teams do it. When you've got a plethora of teams doing it, it's like income disparity. You've got the haves and the have-nots. And there's only so many teams that can pull that off in any given cycle of 5 or 10 years, because you only have so many players that can take you from worst to first.
That is true. SP Futures up 1.25, 150. NASDAQ Futures up 6 again. Twitter up $2. Coca-Cola up $1.30. Earnings this morning have been good and really holding the market up here, I think. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.